If you will be turning, please, to Job chapter 38. We've got 3 weeks to go, 5 chapters to cover, and I want to do that in 2 weeks and then close, as I've said before, on the last lesson with a lesson on why Job died happy. We're leaving a lot behind as we reach chapter 38, because chapter 38 is where God comes in. And there is one major section that goes through really to almost the end that has been entitled Jehovah and Job. So we're going to have a meeting. It's not a confrontation, but it is a meeting, and God's going to give Job some tests. And the end result of those tests will be repentance on the part of Job. The first round in this meeting between Jehovah and Job begins in chapter 38, verse 1, and actually goes through the first 5 verses of chapter 40. But before we look at chapter 38, I think there are some things we need to get in mind about this meeting between Jehovah and Job. We might have many ideas of what Job ought to do and what God ought to do, but we ought to just set all of those think-sos aside and see exactly what was done and how it was done. And I want to list some things that God did not do that you and I might have expected him to do in the meeting with Job. He's had a world of conversations with his friends, but God doesn't reply to the speeches of the friends, or of Job for that matter. He doesn't make any direct reference to the speeches of any of them. God does not discuss the problem of suffering. We might be thinking, after all of Job's sufferings, that God would do that, but God does not discuss the problem of suffering. God does not put himself on the defensive in what he does. He doesn't act as though he had to explain his action to his creatures that he created. Instead of answering Job's questions and responding to Job's demands, and we can recall what those have been, God bombards Job with questions. Questions from God. In chapters 38 through 41, there are 77 questions that God addressed to Job. Now, that's not what Job had been asking for, is it? He wanted a trial. Those questions that God asked him did something else. They made Job aware of how little he knew, and it led to his repentance. In chapter 42, God does not rebuke Job for claiming his innocence and his integrity, because God, I think, agrees with that. To the extent that God rebukes Job, he rebukes him for his boldness, he rebukes him for his presumption that he can dispute with God as his equal. Now, Job never did say that's what he was doing, but he said, I want to talk to God, I want a trial from God, and when I get my trial from God, I'm going to win. I'm not sure God liked that. The real issue that's going on here, as far as Job's statements are concerned, and as far as God's questions are concerned, is this: is God qualified to preside over creation, including man? God in his questions made Job recognize his total dependence and that Job must humbly submit to God and realize that all blessings, if there be blessings to be had, are going to come from God. It ought to be enough, I think, for Job that God spoke to him at all. And all was okay between Job and God at the end. You know, there are in this world such things as art critics. And art critics can do a great deal about explaining to you the Sistine Chapel and the work of Michelangelo and how wonderful it is. But you think about that, and is there something greater? How about a conversation with Michelangelo? Job is getting a conversation with Michelangelo's creator. What could be better for Job? Chapter 38, verses 1 to 3. Job takes the witness stand. Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, "Who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Dress for action like a man. I will question you, and you make it known to me." If God speaks this way to Job, how do you think he might speak to us? Let me suggest an answer or two to you. Turn over in the book of Romans to Romans chapter 9. Verse 20. "But who are you, O man, to answer back to God? Will what is molded say to its molder, 'Why have you made me like this?' Has the potter no right over the clay to make out of the same lump one vessel for honored use and another for dishonorable use?" Turn a few pages over to chapter 11. And let's begin reading about verse 31. "So they too have now been disobedient in order that by the mercy shown to you, they also may now receive mercy. For God has consigned all to disobedience that he may have mercy on all. Oh, the depth of the riches and wisdom and knowledge of God, how unsearchable are his judgments and how inscrutable his ways. For who has known the mind of the Lord, or who has been his counselor, or who has given a gift to him that he might be repaid? For from him and through him and to him are all things. To him be glory forever." Man has no standing to argue with God. Man has standing to believe in God, to bow before God, to praise God, to worship God. And that's the lesson that Job is going to begin to learn here. He's been told, "Job, it's time for you to man up." That's the way we'd say it today. "And you come out here and I'm going to give you a test." Job made zero. Verses 4-7. "Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurement? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it? On what were its bases sunk? Or who laid its cornerstone? When the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy." Job, where were you when I made the earth? God's pictured here as a builder. And he's basically saying to Job, "Now, Job, let me see here. You need to help me, Job. First thing we need to know is, Job, where were you when this happened?" "Oh, you weren't there?" Some people say you never should use sarcasm. You're not going to see sarcasm like God's using on Job. Sometimes it's a good way to teach a lesson. You're going to have to help me, Job. If Job knows nothing about creation, and he had no answer for the question, how can he know anything about God's moral government? And the answer, I think, is he can't. If Job cannot explain creation, how can he explain God? He cannot. But wait a minute, we can all tell about creation. Be careful. I've never met anybody, and I've met a lot of smart folks, who could answer that question. Now, I know a lot of smart folks who can talk about the results of creation because we live with them, we see them. But how was it done? God said, let it be, and it was. But we don't know how God did it after he said, let it be. We can't answer the question. Job could not answer the question. Verses 8 to 11. Who enclosed the sea? Or who shut in the sea with doors when it burst out from the womb? When I made clouds its garments and thick darkness its swaddling band, and prescribed limits for it and set bars for its doors, and said, thus far shall you come and no farther, and here shall your proud waves be stayed. God's pictured as a builder. Here he is a creator. He's pictured as a delivering mother, actually, who gives birth to the seas and then clothes them with clouds and darkness and coastlines. And the oceans knew their place. Because God said, you can come this far, that's your place, and no farther. Well, we can look and see the results of what God said. We can look and see the tides and where they rise and where they fall. And we can even understand that that is caused by yon moon, which has something to do with the tides coming in and moving out. But find me the man who without God could make it happen. Job couldn't. Job realized that he couldn't. If the oceans know their place, so should man. So should Job know his place. Verses 12 to 15. Who commands the sun? Do you have faith in him that he will return your grain and gather it to your threshing floor? The wings of the ostrich wave proudly. Excuse me, I've done it again. That's over in chapter 39. Let's try 38. Have you commanded the morning since your days began and caused the dawn to know its place, that it might take hold of the skirts of the earth and the wicked be shaken out of it? Is it changed like clay under the seal, and its features stand out like a garment? From the wicked their light is withheld, and their uplifted arm is broken. God orders the dawn, the early morning, like a general commanding troops. Job, have you ever commanded the sea? Have you ever commanded the sun? And have you ever given instructions to the sun that this is how you will go and this is when you will go, and you control all of those things? This is something that Job had never done. No man has ever done. And if Job cannot command the sun, then why do we think that he can command God? This rising sun has a job to do. The rising sun, we're told, exposes evil. That's the time that most of the evil is done, when the sun is not there. And those whose deeds are evil love the darkness. Cecil taught us that from John. John chapter 1. So Job maybe should be a little enlightened in his comments about God's fairness and justice. Because here is God creating a light that will reveal the darkness and the evil. But Job can't do that. Verses 16 to 18. Has Job explored the underworld? Have you entered into the springs of the sea or walked in the recesses of the deep? Have the gates of death been revealed to you, or have you seen the gates of deep darkness? Have you comprehended the expanse of the earth? Declare if you know all of this. I can just almost hear the silence of God, if that's not contradictory. Silence sometimes is really loud. But here is Job before God, and God says, in essence, Job, I'm going to be quiet now. You tell me how it's done. Come on, speak up, Job. You're the man who has been making demands and wanting things. I'm giving you a chance right here. Well, it's obvious that Job didn't qualify here to make any answer, because he had not even had, what do they call them? When you think you died and then you come back and they sit down and start describing everything that they saw in heaven. I forget the name of that, but you know what I'm talking about. Job hadn't had even that experience, much less been dead and gone to the tomb. And that's what God is talking about here, these depths. Job, you've never been there. You've never experienced it. You don't know what is beyond, except by faith. So Job, explain it if you can. Could Job understand all of the mysteries of how God works out his moral universe and his spiritual kingdom when he cannot answer any of these questions? In fact, one commentator suggested that to explain this to Job would be like pouring the Atlantic Ocean into a Dixie cup. And I think that's probably right, because that's how much more God knows, start to say, than most of us, than all of us, than any of us. Who orders the light? Verses 19 to 21. Where is the way to the dwelling of light? And where is the place of darkness? That you may take it to its territory, and that you may discern the paths to its home? You know, for you were born then, and the number of your days is great. Now, this is perfect sarcasm. I mean, there's not any better than what God just put on Job here. Who orders the light, Job? Light and dark are here personified and thus are able to receive orders. And not only are they personified and need orders, they need leadership. They need somebody who can lead them to their place. Job, can you do that? Well, Job, if you were old enough to have been present, you might know the answer. But Job wasn't old enough to have been present. And he didn't know the answer. Surely, surely, God says, Job, you were there, so you ought to be able to explain it. He can't. If Job can't understand the light, could it be that he's in the dark about God? At least to some extent. Verses 22 to 24. Have you entered the storehouses of the snow? We've been close here lately, haven't we? Or have you seen the storehouses of the hail, which I have reserved for the time of trouble, for the day of battle and war? What is the way to the place where the light is distributed, or where the east wind is scattered upon the earth? How are you going to do on this one, Job? Who sends the snow and the hail? Job didn't have any kind of idea about those great big refrigerators up in the sky where God keeps all the snow and the hail. Well, if Job can't explain such common events, how could he explain God's providence? I don't think he could. Job doesn't have the power to use the hail in war like God did. Look at Joshua chapter 10, verse 11. You may recall that in Exodus chapter 9, one of the plagues of Egypt was hail. God can use it. Let's see, Job, tell me all the places where you directed the hail and got it to do what you told it. I mean, I have to admit, I do it grudgingly, that all of our weather announcers these days are doing a lot better job since they've got satellites and all that stuff. But they still miss it. And not only do they still miss it, but they didn't cause it to do what it's doing. They're just looking at what it's doing after it's done and telling us about it. Well, Job was at best in that condition. Verses 24 to 27. Who sends the rain and the lightning? What is the way to the place where the light is distributed, or where the east wind is scattered upon the earth? Who has cleft a channel for the torrents of rain, and a way for the thunderbolt to bring rain on a land where no man is, or the desert in which there is no man, to satisfy the waste and desolate man, and to make the ground sprout with grass? Ah, God, Job's got you here. Because Job knows all about the rain. He's lived through all the rain. You think God didn't think of that? God is saying, Job, look here. What about the rain that's out in there in the desert? What about that place where no man has ever been? How about the rain out there? Job can't make it rain. Well, why in the world would God make it rain out there where there are no men and it's desert? Did you ever think that God may enjoy looking at the flowers that he created and that bloom and maybe live just shortly, but live for him to see? God reigns. R-A-I-N-S, because he reigns, R-E-I-G-N-S. Job can't do it. Can't explain it. Well, let's give him an easy one. Verses 28 to 30. Who makes ice? Has the rain a father? Or who has begotten the drops of dew? From whose womb did the ice come forth? And who has given birth to the frost of heaven? The waters become hard like stone, and the face of the deep is frozen. Can Job tell the rain when and where to pour? Not likely. I know a lot of humans who have claimed they can do a lot of things, but I've never heard one claim that. Job doesn't know anything either about the ice, who makes it, where it's from, how it's born, because that's the way it is pictured here. And basically, it tells us that until Job grasps this simple truth, how could he grasp the working of God? And the answer is, he can't. Verses 31 to 33, who directs the planets? Do you know the ordinances of the heavens? Can you establish their rule on the earth? Can you lift your voice to the clouds that a flood of waters may cover you? Can you send forth lightnings that they may go and say to you, here we are? Who has put wisdom I said 31 to 33, I hope. Then I jumped somewhere else. Now I found it. Can you bind the chains of the Pleiades or loose the cords of Orion? Can you lead forth the Maseroth in their season? Or can you guide the bear with its children? Do you know the ordinances of the heavens? Can you establish their rule on the earth? Well, Job can observe their movements, but Job can't explain them, how they were created, how they got in their position, how they stayed in their position. Job has no ability to guide the stars across, or the planets across the sky, but God leads them around like animals. The only one who can control them is God. And only God can control the circumstances below. The seasons, the light, the dark, and the tides. Who forms the clouds? Verses 34 to 38. Can you lift your voice to the clouds that a flood of waters may cover you? Can you send forth lightnings that they may go and say to you, here we are? Who has put wisdom in the inward parts? The NIV says the heart, and that's, I think, probably a good translation. Are given understanding to the mind. Who can number the clouds by wisdom, or who can tilt the water skins of the heavens when the dust runs into a mass and the clouds stick fast together? We've all seen the clouds. We've seen them blow across the sky. We've seen them high. We've seen them low. We've seen clouds about every way we can see. We've seen them dark. We've seen them light. But we have never given a cloud a command. Well, at least we've never given a cloud a command that we really anticipated it would obey. I expect sometimes we tell the rain clouds to go away, but they don't listen to us. Well, what about the lightning bolt? God can control it. Can Job tell it, "I don't like that guy over there. Go over there and get him." Or, "I like this one over there. Don't you dare strike him." Job has no control over the lightning bolt. He can't tell the clouds where to deposit their water. The only one who controls nature is the God of heaven. And only God is fit to control Job's life. And he's slowly learning that. Who feeds the lions? Verses 39 to 40. Can you hunt the prey for the lion or satisfy the appetite of the young lions when they crouch in their dens or lie in wait in their thicket? Who provides for the that's where I stop. Can Job feed the lions? Well, maybe if they're in a zoo and tamed, but a couple of zoo workers have learned lately that they can't even do it there because they've been killed trying to take care of and feed the lions. Would Job even know when the young lions were hungry and when to provide food for them and what food to provide for them? Could he take them to their lair? A lot of things that Job can't do and wouldn't undertake if he could. God can feed them and does so. God can rule the moral order and does so. Who feeds the ravens? Who teaches the ravens to find food to feed their young? Who teaches them that it's time to kick their young out of the nest and send them away? Who put the instinct in them? Job didn't. God did. Lion or raven, beast or bird, God cares for all of them. And Job is learning that the God who feeds the birds can take care of him. Chapter 39. Who delivers the goats and the deer? Now, one thing we need to understand here is that this isn't the common goat or the common deer. And translations generally talk about this being wild animals. Do you know when the mountain goats give birth? Do you observe the calving of the does? Can you number the months that they fulfill, or do you know the time when they give birth, when they crouch, bring forth their offspring, and are delivered of their young? The young ones become strong. They grow up in the open. They go out and do not return to them. You know, I've been around some goats in my life. In fact, I have eaten some. And it's right tasty if it's cooked right. But I couldn't tell you for $1 million what the I don't know how to pronounce that. About the birth procedure for a goat is. Particularly for a wild goat. I've never even hunted for one of them, much less tried to figure out the gestation period. Well, how are baby deer born? And how does a mama deer know when to send them out on their own? Job is absolutely ignorant of all of these things. But the sadness is, up to this point, he's also been ignorant of the workings of God. Who made the donkeys wild? Now, I'm looking at the clock, and I think I better quit reading and start moving ahead. Read it along with me as we discuss it. Verses 5 to 8. Who made the donkeys wild? We're not talking here about tame donkeys. We're talking about wild donkeys. Job had a bunch of domesticated donkeys. They were wiped out back when it all started. But wild donkeys are completely different. Wild donkeys are difficult, if not impossible, to tame. It lives in the wilderness. It lives in salt flats. It doesn't go near any kind of civilization where people disturb his carefree lifestyle, which he has. Job is impotent to manipulate God's creation. He cannot do it. He doesn't have the knowledge. He doesn't have the ability. God didn't put it in him. He's also completely unable to manipulate God with his demands. That, God, I want you here. I want to have my trial. I want this to go on. Maybe it raises the question. Is all of nature wild except man? And I'm wondering if in our society today, if a lot of men are not getting more wild than a lot of the animals. Who made the ox wild? Again, that's not the domestic wild. It's a wild ox. It's a horned animal that is thought by some at that time to be extinct. Some have suggested it's a unicorn, which is mentioned in Scripture, Psalm 22:21 in the King James Version. It's not a unicorn. It's an animal called an aurochs, A-U-R-O-C-H-S. It did become extinct, but it was in 1627 A.D., not B.C., that it's a real animal. We can learn from history. King Thutmose of the III of Egypt died in 1426. He reigned from 1479 to 26 B.C., and he bragged about killing them. They're pictured on the Ishtar Gate in Babylon. They are the third most powerful of all hoofed beasts, third only to the elephant and the hippopotamus. In the Bible, it is a standard symbol of strength. In the Old Testament, it's mentioned 9 times. And that's what we're dealing with here. I think we can all agree that it was not housebroken. God imposes on Job his ability to control. Why does Job think he can control God? He can't control this beast. So how does he think he can control the God who made the beast? Who was it that made the ostrich strange? Why did God make an animal that leaves her eggs unprotected and then forgets where she puts them? Read Lamentations 4, around verse 3. The ostrich has a small head, a long neck, a big body, and stubby wings. But it doesn't compare to a bird that's similar in some respects, like a stork. Job can't understand the ostrich. How can he understand the trials and blessings of his life? There are parts of God's world and Job's life that seem strange. Absolutely. But what Job is learning here and has to learn here is that God is in control. That sometimes maybe God just makes a strange animal to let us know that there are strange things out there in the world. Now that's speculation on my part, because God didn't tell me why he made it, and I don't know why he made it. But that's reason enough in my mind. Who made the horse courageous? These are from verses 19 to 25. It is an eloquent passage. It is one of the most striking descriptions of an animal that you're going to find in all of literature. The horse may be the noblest of all domesticated animals. It serves in many different capacities. And God wants to know. Now, Job, did you give the horse its strength? Did you give it its agility? Did you give it his courage? Only God provided those things. Only God is qualified to govern the affairs of men. That's the lesson that Job needs to take from this. Who made the hawk soar? Who gave it its migrating instinct? Who made it to soar high with seemingly effortless attempt with power? It just seems easy. One answer. God made it soar. Who made the eagle nest on high? Verses 27 to 30. Neither Job's intelligence nor his command can make the eagle fly. Just ponder God's creation and stand in awe. Even look at yourself and see how you are made. Look at Psalm 139, verse 14. Fearfully and wonderfully made. You can't do it. No human can do it. We can produce children. But we can't create them from the dust of the earth and provide then a procedure whereby they may multiply and bring forth children. But what's the conclusion? God is wise, and Job and Jess Hall, and I don't want to upset you, but all of you know nothing. Who are we? Who was Job to contend with God? Certainly the medicine that Job and sometimes we are asked to take is bitter medicine. But it can be wholesome medicine. Job has had two tests. He's failed them both. Much like the student who, upon seeing his final exam and realizing that he didn't know any answers, wrote his professor a note, "God knows the answers, I don't. Merry Christmas." And when he returned from holiday, he had a note from his professor, "God gets 100, you get 0. Happy New Year." Verses 1 and 2 in chapter 40 are transitional between chapters 39 and 40. God's words to Job are brief, they're sharp. Job had said, "Oh, that I knew where I might find him, that I might come even to his seat. I would lay my case before him and fill my mouth with arguments." Job 23, 3 and 4. Job gets his chance. But he says little. He says absolutely nothing that he intended to say. He says nothing about what his friends and he discussed. But what we will see him do is confess before God. We'll reach that next Wednesday night, Lord willing.